I first heard about WBHM when I was working at WSVA in Harrisonburg, Virginia. I was the nighttime announcer there and was kind of a stopgap measure before I got a real showbiz job. And I kept looking at Broadcasting Magazine that would circulate around the station. And to my chagrin, I found the ad for program director for WBHM in the classifieds of a 2 to 3 week old broadcasting magazine. And the ad mentioned classical music, public radio, new to Birmingham. So I quickly fired off a letter to the then general manager, a woman named Florence M. Monroe, and said, "I apologize for this late response because I just saw your ad in broadcasting. I hope the position is still open." Well, I waited and I waited and I waited. And then I got a letter from the program director of WBHM, David Wilkinson, who said that the position of program director had been filled, but would you be interested in applying for the music director position? And I, oh boy, would I ever. So I said, yes, please. Well, making the answer somewhat shorter, I was interviewed for that position. And this was in August of 1976. And when I was sitting in the office of the program director, and I'll pause here to say that the offices, this was before the studio was built, and the offices were about a block and a half away in what were, I guess, apartment buildings at one point. But the University of Alabama was housing some office folks there. And I sat in that room and he laid out the program schedule. Here it is. Here's what we plan to do. And he had all these classical music programs. I thought, oh, this is heaven. This is wonderful. Well, they hired me.
Did you know what public radio was at that time?
I did know what public radio was because when I lived in the Harrisonburg, Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, I had applied for a position at WAMU, American University, and I listened to WAMU and WETA. I was able to get that in Broadway, Virginia, where I lived, just outside of Harrisonburg. And was apparently on a short list for a position at WAMU. So I was aware of public radio and what it could do.
Looking back on it, do you think public radio knew what it was?
That was the beauty of public radio. It was, I think, trying to define itself. It may still be trying to do that. But back then, it was a wonderful cultural mecca of programming that not only did the tried and true, i.e., and now the Mozart Symphony No. 40, you know, performance by, but also kind of the zany things that the staff members of various public radio stations would try. And it was a wonderful, I hesitate to use the word playground because the broadcasters were serious. And they were trying new ground. The beauty of the beginning of WBHM was that the city was anxious to have a classical music radio station, a public radio station. If my memory serves, there had been some classical music played late at night on a commercial radio station in the city, but no station was dedicated to that format.
What do you remember about WBHM's first day on the air and the weeks leading up to it?
My first job as music director at WBHM was to catalog the tiny little music library, the record library. And so they had purchased the Columbia LPs, and I think they had RCAs, and of course they were begging records. Remember records, don't you? From various labels. And my job was to start a catalog. And so Dave Wilkinson, the program director at the time, and I went to a store and we bought file cabinets, little file drawers, and bought blank cards, and I had a little Royal portable typewriter, and I sat in that hot office there, a block and a half away or so from the current station, typing. And we built this catalog. When the building in which you now sit was finished, remodeled into a master control studio and the what we called the interview performance studio, our job was to have what was called a dead week. So the week prior to December 5th, 1976, we had the news director, Betty Lee, and her assistant, Lewis White, and several announcers run the schedule. We played radio, literally, but we didn't tell anybody we were doing this. I think a few people may have tuned in. They were anxious to hear the signal. And we just practiced, and we made mistakes, and we had goofs and things like that. But when we were ready for the sign-on day, December 5th, 1976, it was a Sunday, the official sign-on, we were ready to go. Now, there was, as I recall, no glass between the news studio and the master control, or the soundproofing was really pretty shaky at the time, and there was still some construction stuff to be done, but we were determined to get on the air on time, and we did. We signed on officially at 1 p.m. on December 5th.
And what was the feeling at that particular moment?
The feeling was one of great excitement. I cannot recall being involved with such an operation that generated as much excitement as that did. We had the press, the Birmingham News, Oliver Roosevelt, of course, had been a strong proponent of creating such a radio station, and he was integral in the planning of the station, serving on a committee to get it going, working with the University of Alabama in Birmingham. And we all gathered in the studio adjacent to the master control room, and I dare say we had champagne. There was so much excitement, and it was so much fun going to work and developing programming, getting into the community and recording concerts and broadcasting those. And it was just a wonderful ride.
You have some old tape from the time you were here. Tell me what we'll be listening to.
Well, one of the air checks I did took place on June 9th, 1977. I was substituting at the time for Pat Livingston, who was your first sign-on announcer. In fact, Pat was the one who looked up at the clock as the second hand struck 12 and the little hand was on 1 and said, "Welcome, this is WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama." And Pat was the morning host for a couple of months, and I filled in for her on a vacation day. And so I air-checked myself. So what you'll hear is portions of a program called Wake Up Birmingham.
If you think Moonbeam is the pet for you, call the Birmingham Humane Society at 780-7281 or visit the shelter, 24 West 17th Street.
And, of course, if you adopt Moonbeam, you might become starstruck. In any event, Mindy Norton reports for the Humane Society here in Birmingham on Pet Patrol twice a day at 7:30 in the morning and just before All Things Considered at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Incidentally, tonight at 8 o'clock, you can hear a performance by the Utah Symphony Orchestra in music by Mozart, Strauss, and Beethoven. Hope you'll listen, and I hope you'll listen to NPR News, which is next on WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm Les Myers for the vacationing Pat Livingston, who will return on Monday. And, of course, tomorrow I hope you'll join me on Wake Up Birmingham when we'll feature our TGIF feature. 8 o'clock.
From National Public Radio in Washington, the morning news.
Good morning, I'm Bob Siegel, reporting that British Commonwealth leaders are meeting without Ugandan President Idi Amin.
What did the station do in terms of fundraising?
We had a on-air fundraising campaign, But Florence Monroe, the general manager at the time, was also keen on having what we called out-of-station fundraisers. And because we did have old-time radio shows on the air in the evening, we enacted or reenacted a variation of a live radio drama. And I don't remember the script now. I think we had to call it The Lone Arranger. Because of copyright problems, we couldn't call it The Lone Ranger. And somebody in Birmingham, it may have been Dale Short, but I don't remember who wrote the script. But we got on stage. And I'm trying to think where James Hatcher, his theater, we used his theater and his stage. And we did a radio drama as they did back in the good old days, back in the 30s and 40s, with sound effects and that sort of thing. And the idea was to invite the public to attend, but the ticket prices were set so that people knew that this was a fundraiser for WBHM. We conducted the usual on-air campaigns with more frequency as our fiscal years evolved and as the station continued in 1977 and 78 and 79. We would invite community leaders and other community people into our studios to do the actual on-air fundraising, and you may do that now. And it was great fun. I remember a banker and a lawyer. I don't remember their names, but a banker and a lawyer got on the air to fundraise. And they challenged their respective constituencies to pledge. And this was late morning, 10, 11 o'clock. So the early morning stuff had kind of died down. Well, these two birds got on and had at it and raised a lot of money. Another time was we were fundraising and Susan Stamberg was in town for a speaking engagement. And the NPR PR lady said, "Don't ask Susan to fundraise. She will not do that. You can interview her if you want, but do not ask her to fundraise." So our news director invited Susan into the studio to interview her, and indeed she did. And then Susan came out of the studio and said, "Oh, you've got a fundraiser going, right?" And the news director said, "Well, yes, we do." All the time thinking, I can't ask her to get on the air, but wouldn't it be great? Well, Susan said, "Would you like me to say something on behalf of WBHM? Oh, my gosh, yes. So Susan went into the studio and sat down with a guest who was one of the community people who immediately lit up and took with Susan. And the two of them carried on a great conversation that raised a bunch of bucks. And Susan was gracious. She was funny. She was serious about supporting public radio, national public radio, but also WBHM. It was one of the neat moments in WBHM's broadcast time.
Today, we almost take it for granted that we receive programming via satellite. How did a program like All Things Considered actually get to WBHM? The satellite system that public radio uses now didn't come into play till several years later.
In the old days, when WBHM signed on, getting network feeds was an interesting experience because we had, I believe, something like an 8,000 or an 8 kilohertz phone line, which fed the or received the programs from National Public Radio. So All Things Considered, for example, came down on this balanced phone line somewhere, and we would adjust the highs and lows with equalizers and so on, and it worked. When the satellite system was installed, it was an amazing difference. We had gotten used to that kind of phone line sound, but when the satellite came in, it was just terrific.
How long did you work here at WBHM?
I started in September of 1976, and I left in November of 1983.
And tell us what you do now.
I am the director of the Maine Audio Information and Reading Service, Maine AIRS, which is a broadcast reading service for blind and visually impaired and print handicapped individuals. We have volunteer readers who read the daily and weekly newspapers published in Maine over a broadcast service furnished by Maine Public Broadcasting. We use the secondary audio program channel, or SAP channel, of MPBN. And we have listeners all over the state who tune in and enjoy hearing their local newspapers, because many of our listeners have lost their sight after years of being able to read, age-related macular degeneration and other eye ailments have reduced or eliminated their ability to read.
From what you know of WBHM today, what are your thoughts?
If I were a space traveler and I had been away from WBHM, not only physically but also orally, since 1983, and I were to be plopped back into your listening sphere today, I would be pleased with the ongoing professional sound of the station. I would be pleased with the amount of classical music you continue to play. I would be pleased with your local news coverage and with your arts coverage. Tapestry, for example, which is a finely produced program, high production values, as we say in the trade.